We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
From Pod World Headquarters, this is the Carolina Insider from Learfield IMG College.
We're back. Time for another edition of the Carolina Insider. Jones and Adam here with you. And Adam, I made a very strong proclamation last show. I would like to do so again on this episode. I proclaim, Adam, that today is Friday.
It's Friday, Friday. Gotta get down on Friday. Everybody's looking forward to the weekend, weekend. Partying, 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 partying. Fun, 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 fun. Looking forward to the weekend.
Adam, we have a good show coming up.
Better than good.
Yeah. Yeah. We're going to preview the Tar Heels and the Pack. Earliest meeting for these two in quite some time since 2013. I think that's right. I'll double check my math on that. First time they've met in the month of October since 2012. Of course, this game had settled into the final regular season of game of the year. That's different this season. So we'll preview Carolina and State. Adam, I have almost guaranteed, Adam, pre us coming on the air here, that you will have success in the five-second challenge. Sorry, I was checking my math on that. It's the earliest they've met since 2005, not 2013. I was a wee bit off there. But I have guaranteed your success in the five-second challenge.
We'll see.
No, I almost 100% am confident that you will have the best score you've ever had in the five-second challenge. Now, I don't know what the best score you've ever had is, but whatever it is, this is going to be better.
I just don't have a lot of confidence in my game right now.
I'm bringing in... Adam, I'm bringing in the 1AA team for you to play to get your confidence back. So that's coming up in a little bit. Plus, Adam, we have what you and I have already deemed a very likely potty nominee in our interview today. Now, as you remember, the potty interviews are breaking into multiple categories. We're going to have... For this upcoming potty campaign, it's going to be current athlete interviews, former athlete interviews, non-athlete interviews, each in its own category for a potty. So, Adam, this one falls in the former Tar Heel athlete interview. It is Mike Copeland, member of the 2009 National Championship team. You might be going, wait, yeah, I remember Mike, but Adam, it's a terrific. You were there. You know it's a terrific interview.
When I arrived home from the salt mines on Tuesday, my wife said, "Who's going to be on the pod on Friday?" Oh,
did you keep her in the dark?
I said, "I cannot tell you the answer to that question."
Yeah.
It'll be uploaded early Friday morning when Jones awakens at 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And
first thing I do at 4:01.
You can find out then. So now the people know, and they're about to get hit with some major Mike Copeland knowledge.
We're just going to leave it at that. You're going to really like it. Some great stories, funny stories. It's going to be awesome.
Fast forward through it if you don't like Carolina basketball or funny things.
Yeah.
Or nice people.
Yeah.
If you don't like any of those things, it's not for you.
Yeah. If you like one or more of those things, it's right up your alley. Adam, do you have a list?
Yes.
Okay, I felt good about that. We hadn't discussed.
Was that the 5-second challenge?
Yes, ding. We hadn't discussed that in our pre-show production meeting, but I felt good about it. So all of that is coming up. A reminder that we are brought to you by the College Foundation of North Carolina. Visit cfnc.org for everything you need to plan, apply, and pay for college this application season, and it's now in an easy-to-use, updated format as well. Adam, Carolina and State, coming up Saturday at noon. We'll be on the air at 11 o'clock radio-wise. It is just the third time ever that these two teams have both been ranked when facing off against one another. That's hard to believe. The other two, 1979 and 1993, Tar Heels were able to win both of those particular meetings. If you're wondering, they have faced one another previously 23 times when one of the two teams was ranked, but the other was not. 4 times State was ranked and the Tar Heels weren't. 19 times Carolina was ranked and State wasn't. Both these teams have played well early in the year. We know the Tar Heels are 3-1. We know they're coming off their disappointment in Tallahassee. State is 4-1, won its first game against Wake Forest, then got blown out by Virginia Tech, and has since recovered with some quality wins, a close one against Pitt where they won in the final minute, and then double-digit wins against Virginia and Duke in games that were probably maybe a little closer, particularly the Duke game, than the final score might suggest. So what do you need to know about State, Adam?
You can't get to heaven in a red canoe because God's favorite color is Carolina blue?
Yes.
All right, let's get to that Mike Copeland interview.
So State, of course, lost its starting quarterback last week. It was eerie how similar that injury was to the Dak Prescott injury for Devin Leary, who was sliding after running against Duke, took a targeting hit, and I don't know if the hit certainly didn't help. It exacerbated the slide, but his foot had kind of gotten caught under his body as he was sliding. Then the hit just added with the force and unfortunately suffered what was a pretty nasty-looking break in his lower leg, likely out for the rest of the year. Can't imagine. Certainly 6 to 8 weeks minimum, Adam.
They first said 4 to 6 weeks. That I am not an orthopedic doctor. That would seem very fast, but hope so for Devin Leary.
Sure. So Bailey Hockman likely going to be the starter at quarterback, a Florida State transfer, then went to junior college, then made his way to State. And it's been weird. He's been, this is his second year with State. He's started some games. He's come off the bench. You know, State hasn't been really settled at that quarterback spot these last two seasons. I think for them, the losing Leary is a blow. I think they had settled finally on Leary, and he'd been playing pretty well. Made some big throws, particularly in that Pittsburgh game, but unfortunately suffered the injury. So Hockman's going to come in. He started the first two games this year for them, looked pretty good against Wake, did not look good at all against Virginia Tech. So he's going to get the start. State can run the ball. Zonovan Knight, they call him Bam. Bam Knight, Ricky Person Jr. are their two main backs. They also have Jordan Houston, who runs it some. And they're good backs. They're good players, and they want to get them involved in what's going on. Have a veteran group at wide receiver, names you will probably recognize, Emeka Emezi, Thayer Thomas, guys who've been around for a while. And so got a really good tight end in Kerry Angeline, 6'7". They look for him a bunch, as you would expect in the red zone. He had 6 touchdowns already this season. So they have some good, experienced players on offense. Their defense is not as experienced. I think their best two players on that side of the ball, Aleem McNeil, big defensive tackle. Adam, I know you don't have a vote for preseason All-ACC. I do, and I voted Aleem McNeil as one of the two D tackles along with Marvin Wilson from Florida State. In my preseason poll, McNeil did not actually end up being preseason All-ACC, but he's had a terrific year. And Peyton Wilson, who had a ridiculous 19 tackles and 2 interceptions, ACC linebacker of the week last week against Duke. He originally committed to Carolina's from Hillsboro and then changed his commitment to State, had some not very nice things to say about Carolina in that process. Good player, though, at the linebacker spot. Secondary is pretty young for State. They've had some injuries there, too, so we'll see. So that's just a quick overview of the personnel. I think Carolina's the better team. I think Carolina will be the best offense that State has seen, certainly since Virginia Tech and maybe all year. I think it will be the best passing attack they have seen this season for sure. Their defensive numbers were not good the first couple of games. They gave up a bunch to Wake and to Virginia Tech. They have improved over the last couple of weeks, but I also think the teams they've played haven't been as good offensively, but they have gotten better, and they forced a lot of turnovers, 7 of them in the last 2 games. They've blocked a punt each of the last 2 weeks, concerning for the Tar Heels, who have struggled some in that area. And they're going to play really hard. I think they do that normally anyway, but I think just with Carolina there, they're of course going to play hard, and the Tar Heels will have to match that. So I think Carolina's the better team, but this is certainly a game where the Heels are going to have to be ready to go, and they're going to have to play well to have a chance to win.
I think it helps NC State that they'll have this week to prepare the offense to best fit Bailey Hockman. It's not like Devin Leary went down in the course of this game, and then all of a sudden you've got to make what you had already planned fit the other quarterback. You can take this week and make the offense fit the quarterback who is actually going to play, which I would assume would involve a copious amount of handing the ball off, because they do have the two really good running backs. It'll be interesting to watch the duel between the two offensive backfields, because two really good running backs on both sides. Special teams concerns me for the reasons Jones just said. State's blocked 2 punts and has gotten a lot of momentum off those plays the last 2 weeks. And the other thing that it seems like is kind of energized their defense, they've had a couple big goal line stands the last couple weeks where they've stopped the opponent without scoring on 4 downs each of the last 2 weeks, relatively at important stages in the game. And it's not a tremendous secret what Carolina is going to do if they're in that, all right, it's first and goal at the 2 situation. It's going to involve Javonte, Pablo, and Cash getting on into the end zone. And so that could be a matchup to keep an eye on. I think the clearest advantage in the game is Carolina's receivers and passing game against the NC State secondary, which may eventually be good, but right now I think is not as good as Daz Newsome and De'Ami Brown and Carolina's Bo Corrales, very talented receivers.
When State goes to goal line, they like to put in 3 nose tackles, Aleem McNeil, Joshua Harris, and C.J. Clark. Those 3 guys are combined 964 pounds, those 3 guys. And so they like to put them in together in the goal line package, some big, big bodies. Adam, I'll be interested to see how Carolina's defense plays. I think the Tar Heels started so well defensively in the first couple of games. They haven't been as good these last two games. Now, they've also played, I think, a good offensive team in Virginia Tech and then got a little bit lost in the momentum of that first half of what Jordan Travis was able to do for Florida State and his all the things we talked about, his mobility, some of the stuff. First half, second half last week, Carolina gave up 31 points, 11 first downs, and 280 yards in the first half. That went to 0 points, 5 first downs, and 152 yards in the second half. So, I think, as we've talked about many times, I think Jay Bateman's an excellent defensive coordinator. I think Carolina's personnel on the defensive side is growing. I think they're better, they're deeper, they're not where they want to be yet. They've taken hits, as we've discussed. I think this is a big game for Carolina's defense just to show that it's better. It's more like the team we saw the first two games than the team that we've seen the last couple of games on the defensive side. And again, I want to be clear, the defense got a lot better in the second half against Florida State. So let's see if they can continue that and create some turnovers. You know, that's, again, the Heels just hadn't done it very much, just two all year. And the interception by Morrison at the end of the BC game doesn't count, so you can really say three. But still, a pretty low number. I think it's only nine teams have only forced either one or two turnovers so far this season, and Carolina's one of them. So that would be, in my opinion, something to keep an eye on. And I do think last week makes you forget that Carolina moved the ball. I mean, they almost had 600 yards of total offense for the second straight week. And they just didn't finish off those drives. They need to finish. When they get a chance to score, they need to score. You know, whether that's if they attempt a field goal, they need to make a field goal. And if they go for it on fourth down in those key areas, you got to get those. I mean, if your coach has the confidence in you to call them, to call for it, you got to get it. You know, those are important plays. And so the Tar Heel offense is obviously very skilled. We know this. They're mature. We know this. They just need to just finish it off a little bit offensively, and I think that will go a long way.
That old fourth down thing is interesting because, in general, as we have discussed, I like Mac Brown's aggressiveness on fourth down because I think the percentages tell you that although that's not the conventional play, that's the smarter play. But unfortunately, the percentages don't tell you that you will get it every time.
Right.
So there are going to be times that you don't get it. What you hope is that those times you don't get it are not multiple in the same game and also combined with two block punts and a pick six, because then your fourth down decisions look a lot shakier when you have to also overcome those things. If Carolina just goes for it on fourth down three times and makes it twice, all right, that's pretty good, but not when combined with all that other stuff. So you just can't have the epic fails that Carolina had in so many areas in the first half in Tallahassee. And I think defensively, the part of the defense that's younger or less experienced in the secondary will be helped in this game by the fact that it does not appear that Bailey Hockman presents quite the running threat as some of the other opposing quarterbacks that have presented some problems for the Tar Heels the last couple weeks.
Carolina was 0 for 3 on fourth down last week. One of them was the final play of the game, which they should have converted. We understand that. I think the fourth and one at the 25, I think Mac Brown probably goes for that 100 times out of 100 or 99 out of 100. I mean, it was early in the game. Carolina's moving the ball. Tar Heels can run the ball. You should be able to get that. The fourth and three at the 6, I think, is the only one that armchair quarterbacks can second guess. But Brian Simmons, and you know, Brian on the radio was very adamant that he thought Carolina should kick a field goal at that time. But I think it's also worse. I mean, Mac Brown he's just doing what he said he was going to do. And that is, he said he's going to stay really aggressive offensively. He's going to encourage Phil Longo to be really aggressive in those situations. And he feels like that's the right move. And so I understand that when things don't go, when it doesn't work, it's going to get second guessed. But don't be surprised. Mac Brown's told you this is what he's going to do, and my guess is that it's not going to stop.
And also, you have to think about what the other option is. in your mind, you're thinking, oh, the other option is a field goal. Well, it's not a guaranteed 3 points the way things are going. If the decision was between going for it on fourth down or Nick Weiler comes out there and booms it through every single time, that's a different discussion. This is a discussion between making it on fourth down or possibly making a field goal, which is just as demoralizing if you miss it as if you don't make it on fourth down.
Yeah, Tar Heels need to be more consistent there. And it's been odd. Grayson Atkins, I may have said this already on here. I mean, his kicks, it's not like he's wildly missing. I thought the one at Florida State was good for a second. I mean, his kicks have great height, great length. They've just been a little off. All three of his misses have been just a little to the left. And so you can tell he can kick it. That's not the problem. It's just that it's just a little off. And so I think it would benefit him to see a few of them go in, I would assume, and maybe get on a little bit of a roll. Because I think he's a talented kicker. It just hadn't gone in.
We learned this on the video pod yesterday, Jens. If you're missing the same way every time, in this case to the left, you just aim a little more to the right. That's what Phil Mickelson told Mac Brown. And I'm sure that's what Mac Brown will tell Grayson Atkins.
That's right.
Young man, Phil Mickelson once told me.
My good friend, Phil Mickelson. So, Carolina State, noon.
There is a constitutional mandate that this game starts at noon.
Yeah, it's last year was a night game.
That's different. That's not at Keenan Stadium.
Yeah, Carolina's, and it's going to be this way next week. Virginia's at 8. It's like the Tar Heels are playing their afternoon and evening games on the road, and every game in Keenan's kicking off at high noon, baby. Let's go. And by the way, we have to announce our ticket winner coming up after our Mike Copeland interview. We're going to tell you who won the tickets to Carolina and NC State. You had to watch the video pod to know how to enter to win. And we have a winner. 2 tickets to Carolina State. We'll announce that coming up in a little bit. Adam, am I missing anything? Anything else you want to talk about between the Tar Heels and the Wolfpack?
Don't think so. Tar Heel injury status, basically the same as last week.
No Storm Duck, unfortunately for the Heels. And other than that, unless there has been either something that has come up in practice that I'm unaware of, or, of course, there's always the COVID-related absence that could come up for both these teams, but we wouldn't know that until day of the game, quite honestly. So, to the best of my knowledge, the Tar Heels are doing okay in that regard. I will say just one thing. I think it's interesting how the tenor of this game has changed a little bit since Mac Brown got here. And I don't mean the success that the Tar Heels have had or what's happening on the recruiting trail, any of that. And I don't know Dave Doran at all, the head coach of NC State. He doesn't seem quite as blustery towards the Tar Heels with Mac Brown here than he was before. And I think he has a lot of respect for Coach Brown. I'm not saying he didn't have respect for Coach Fedora. That's not my point. I just think Mac Brown's a veteran, national championship-winning, Hall of Fame head coach that most people really, really like. And it seems like that just some of that has died down, at least publicly, since Mac Brown got here.
In general, the best time to be blustery is not the 12 months after you get beat 41-10 at your own stadium.
Yeah. And the other team is cleaning house on the recruiting trail.
Right. Has a way of dampening the bluster.
Adam, I would like you to pick up your phone, hold it high in the air, dial a number, and call a Carolina hero. Because, oh, Adam, did you just call me? That was nice. Now more than ever, we've seen Tar Heels from every corner of the state coming together to help our communities through these challenging times. Nominations are open for the 2020 Homegrown Heroes presented by LS Tractor. We look to recognize a special group of frontline workers, teachers, police, fire, EMT, community leaders, military heroes, and more. If you have an unsung hero in your family or community, we need to hear about it. GoHeels.com/hero. GoHeels.com/hero. Share their story for a chance to win an amazing prize pack. $250 in merch and a custom Big Freak cooler. GoHeels.com/hero. Nominate your hero today. Can I make a request, Adam?
Of course.
If someone has done this, has sent in a nomination for a hero to GoHeels.com/hero, email us at CarolinaInsiderPod@gmail.com and tell us the story. Like, give us a quick version of the story that you nominate. We'll tell it here. I'm interested to know the type of folks that are being nominated. So if you're listening and you've nominated someone and you think to do it, just copy and then paste it into an email or whatever and send it to us, because I'd be interested to see the nominations that are coming in.
And if you haven't nominated someone, this podcast will probably go off the air and it's going to be your fault.
Yeah, no big deal. It's all hanging in the balance on you. Okay. Our discussion with Mike Copeland. We can't even say it. This is an awesome interview. We may as well just get to it, and then we can talk about it afterwards. So, interview with Cope. We have 5-second challenge. Adam is about to be hoisted to the mountaintop of success. And Adam's list and more all coming up. But first, our interview with Mike Copeland here on the Carolina Insider.
Look, I fully realize that a lot of times people say bad things about Jones.
Yeah, that's understandable.
Or bad things about me. I challenge any one of you to find any person who has something bad to say about our guest today, Mike Copeland, 2009 national champion, who is beloved by everyone, including the Carolina Insider podcast. So, Cope, thanks so much for being with us today.
Hey, man. Thanks, guys, man. Thanks for having me, man. I appreciate it.
Adam, look at this. We have to wear masks in here. This is the new world. I don't like it.
But at least we actually get to be in the room with
Cope. Yeah, that's true.
Which is better.
Yeah.
You got to take the positives where you can, Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Cope, what's going on in your life, man? What's up?
Oh, man, just coaching and staying a part of the game and staying close to the game and helping kids get better, man, and doing some school and, just out there, man, just staying close to the kids and working a little bit with it.
Tell people where you're coaching and what you're doing.
The last 2 years I was coaching at Forsyth Country Day. That's in Louisville, North Carolina, like in Winston. And this past year I actually, back in my alma mater, R.J. Reynolds.
Nice.
And I was supposed to be coaching the ninth grade, but I think they canceled the ninth grade season, so that sucks. But I'm gonna be helping with the varsity and JV, and I'm working over there too. It's awesome, man, to be back home.
What do you like about coaching?
I like to help the kids, man. I like to see a kid, you know, if I'm helping a kid with a jump shot or, you know, boxing out or, you know, seeing them do a layup, you know, hit a free throw, you know, just his positive and his motivation to get better, you know, his strides and just wanting to be the best. I love to help kids try to get to their peak.
Do they listen to you? Like, do they realize you know what you're talking about?
A lot of kids, I mean, some of the kids, they know that I love to play around a lot too. So some of them be like, oh man, he's joking. But then a lot of kids know when I get serious, you know, I put my hard hat on and, you know, they ready to work and they're trying to get better, man. They look at me as a role model as, oh, you made it and you made the Carolina, you won a championship. We want to try to make it that same way.
Cope, you look like you're in great shape, man. Are you like in like top physical peak right now?
I want to shout out RJ Fitness, man. he's one of my good friends, man. I've been training with him for the last few weeks. I got on this new diet, this keto diet, and all my old teammates, man, they all said that I was going to be the fat person when we finished playing, man. And I did not want to do that, man. I saw myself, felt myself getting fat. So I just got on that diet and worked out with RJ, man. And he got me back in shape, man. Like, I'm probably at, like, my playing weight when I was here, actually.
Okay, tell me about the keto diet? Like, what do you have to do? That sounds hard. That's the one where it's like a whole lot of protein, right?
Yes, all protein. The keto diet, when I first started, man, I got a migraine because I'm so used to eating carbs and eating bread. I'll eat everything, you know, cornbread, all the fattened foods, man. I'm eating it, fried chicken.
Wait a minute. Man. Something's wrong with these things? Nobody told me about cornbread
in the world.
Hey, I love, if you know me, I love cornbread. So to push away from the table a little bit from that stuff, it helped me, man, and I saw a tremendous change in my body.
Is that hard to do?
I mean, it is, man.
So what is, like, what's a normal day of eating like for you
well,
now?
I get up, eat a, you know, I eat an egg sometimes, and then the rest of my day I eat like a salad, and then at night I eat some protein, eat like a steak, some grilled chicken. It's tough, man. It took me a while to get used to it, but it's not bad when, you know, after you start seeing results, then
sure,
you start getting happy with it.
Yeah, right now you look like you're ready to go, like, post up Ben McCauley or something.
Well, I got Ben McCauley, man. Shout out to Ben McCauley, man. hey, I tell you what, man. You know, if I knew these things that I knew back in the day, I probably – I mean, I was in good shape when I was here, but – I was eating everything, you know, five-star restaurants, you know. Coach took us, you know, Chop House and the Angus Barn. Oh, man, I miss those days. But, you know, it's good to be able to control a little bit now and realize that I live longer eating better.
Sure. Cope, so you played for a while after your Carolina days, but you also had a pretty serious injury, right?
Yes.
Tell us what happened. It was your leg, right?
Yeah, it was my knee. It was my left knee, actually. When I was here, I had problems with my right knee. Tore my ACL, tore my meniscus. But then I went overseas, and I successful 2 years of non-injuries, which was crazy because I was eating everything over there, too. Scotland. Shout out Glasgow, Scotland, Glasgow Rocks. But yeah, man, it was a great experience. My third year, I was actually in London, and had a new trainer and it was a whole new organization. They did things a little differently. They put us through a lot of work. You know, early in the morning, wake up, practice weights, go back. You gotta train again. Then you're working out with the kids. Then you got weightlifting. Then we got another night practice. It was a lot on my knees, man. I remember I was going through a lot of tendonitis at the time. And I remember I was played against my old team, the Glasgow Rocks, actually. And I drove to the basket, and I remember I pro-hopped. And I never really pro-hopped, you know, when I was here or in high school. But it was a move that I saw that I wanted to do. And my knee buckled, and I ended up tearing my patella tendon. And it freaked me out, man, because I'm over in a whole nother country.
Sure.
And I'm thinking, like, oh, I can't go back home and have surgery. There's no way I'd get home. So I had to have surgery over there. It was a tough situation, but got through it, man. I had some good people over there who helped me. Got back here and started coaching.
From the day-to-day life perspective, how'd you like living over there?
Oh, man. You know what? People think it's a lot different than here. It's not really, you know. English is crazy. The food is different. The weather, oh man. Now if you're gonna complain about something, man, if you like the sun and like, you know, nice 78 degree weather in the spring and stuff, no, they don't have that. They don't
that
have that.
Not the place for you.
Not the place for you, man. I mean, it's rainy, it's 50 all the time, 40. I mean, you know, the people, man, it's just crazy thing about it. The people know how to have fun over there. You know, I remember waking up in the morning and having practice at 8 or 9 and people being at the bar drinking, taking shots and scotch and all that stuff and just, you know, ready to go to work. And I'm just.
Wait, what's wrong with that? Cope, isn't that a normal day?
You just described a normal work day for Jens.
But, you know, I took a part of it. It was like, wow, I understand it. You know, you don't have sun. You know, it's always rainy. It's nothing, you know, it's nothing to really watch over there but soccer. I mean, that's probably the most exciting thing over there. They don't watch NFL. You know, it's kids watch NBA over there, but soccer is probably the most exciting thing. But, you know, it was, like I said, it was a great experience, man, and it's not as different as people think it is.
Do they know anything about basketball?
Yeah, they do about North Carolina. Now, I remember seeing people with hoodies on. I remember somebody asking me to sign a hoodie. I remember seeing the ugly Duke over there. And, surprisingly, I saw a lot more college mobilia than anything else. I didn't see a lot of NBA stuff other than like New York, LA, you know. But yeah, man, they like basketball over there. A few fans. Yeah.
So I want to talk about your entire Carolina career, but I want to go to the national championship. Let's go to the end first. I want to talk about championship game.
Like
so you had the ball in your hand at the very end of the game, right?
Well, can we rewind a little bit?
Yeah.
I just want to rewind a little bit. I watched this not too long ago. My team that I coached at Sight Country Day, we went undefeated, and we had like a little party after, and we watched the game. And right before that play, Mark Campbell, shout out Mark Campbell. I haven't seen you in a couple of years, but shout out Mark Campbell. He had the ball, and I was wide open. And I was going to dunk that thing, man, because I don't know if y'all remember. We played Raffer in the first round over here at, in
Greensboro. Yeah.
Yes. No. It was in Raleigh. It was in the RBC Center. And I got a dunk. And I dunked that thing. It was right at 100 points. Everybody went crazy. And I said, I got to get me another one, man. I got to get me another. And that was my chance. And Mark Campbell goes down there and misses the layup. Oh, it was karma, man. And so then after that, he gave me the ball at the end. And honestly, I didn't want to throw it. I was going, man, I just want to keep it, man. Just hold on to it. But then he's like, you got to throw it in the air. So I threw it. And it went backwards. I don't know if y'all noticed that. I threw the ball forward and went backwards. But, oh, man, what a great experience, man. And fun times, man. It was good times.
Were you, like, actually open or, like, I'm a basketball player who feels like I'm always open?
The only person who was behind me was Justin Watts. That's the person behind me. I think we got a steal. It was off a steal. Wide open, running right down the lane. And the bad thing about it, he made eye contact with me. He looked me right in my eyes, man.
He knew what you wanted?
He knew it. He knew it. And you know what? If he made the layup, I wouldn't have been as mad, but he missed the layup. Yeah. So, but like I said, it was a great experience, man. It was fun times, man. And to see Danny do it again, sorry to change subject, but see him win another one, man, it's just like, wow, man. This guy just keeps winning.
Would you have ever guessed in 2009 that it would be Danny Green who would be a three-time world champion and playing for the Lakers and everything he's achieved?
Man, you know what, man? Me and Quinn Thomas, shout out Quinn Thomas, we were just talking about this.
By the way, we've had Q on this podcast, yep. And he's awesome. And Q just had he's got a new album out, right?
Midsummer's Nightmares. Check it out, man. Go get that thing, man. It's fire. It's only like 7 tracks on there, but my favorite one is Big Luther, man. He's killing that, man. He's getting better. He's getting better. I love listening to him, man. But we was just talking about it, man, and it was crazy because Danny was the one always getting fussed at. Me and him, we all got fussed at by Roy. And Coach, look, Coach would be on top of Danny, but all the time. I mean, from my freshman year to my senior year, and even when Danny got into the league and he got, you know, himself acclimated with San Antonio, I even heard Pop was on his butt all the time. So, you know, at that time, you know, we was thinking, like, Danny's doing good, but we never thought he'd be doing this good, man. I'm just so proud of him, man. What is it, top 5 in three-pointers, yep, all the time in the playoffs, man? That's just amazing, man. 3 rings, 3 different teams. I mean, and he's been, you know, I don't want to talk about anybody else, but he's been a part of these rings. Like, he's a role player. He has a big role of guarding the best player and knocking down shots when they need it. And, you know, I know he didn't have his best bubble. You know, he didn't play the best in the bubble this year. But, you know, he hit some shots, man. He has some good defensive plays against Denver. And like I said, man, I'm just proud of him, man. He just got to keep going.
I was talking to Marcus Guignard recently. You want to give a shout-out to Marcus
Guignard? Shout out Marcus Guignard over there in France, man. Hey, keep doing your thing, man. I'm proud of you too, man. Man, hey, we're getting old, man, but we still going, baby. I love it.
Exactly. And he said that the thing he remembered from his freshman year was how many questions Danny always asked Coach Williams. Like, he had an explanation for something he had done wrong. What are your memories of that part of Danny Green?
You know, that's another thing that me and Q was just talking about. We were talking about how Larry Drew did the same thing. Shout out Larry Drew. I know people don't like Larry, but that was my guy, man. I love Larry. But everything that Coach would say, even if it wasn't like, you know, towards Danny or in a negative way, Danny has something to say. And we used to look at Danny and be like, just be quiet, man. Just shut up, man. You know if he's going to make us run or he's going to get on his bad side. Just be quiet, man. And then Danny was like, I was just joking. No, no jokes, no nothing. Just be quiet. Just shut up. Let's just take it and listen to Coach, man. Look, let Coach talk, man. But, you know, some of the questions Danny had were good questions, but it's not a very good question when Coach is talking. Just be quiet, man.
So what do you said Larry Drew is your guy. I do think Carolina fans in large have very mixed feelings about Larry Drew.
Yeah.
What should they know about Larry Drew that you know that a normal, casual Carolina fan doesn't know?
Well, you know, just like recently I seen some of the guys taking up for Cole. You know, I'm going to take up for Larry, man. Larry was a great teammate to me, man. When I came back off my ACL tear, and I remember practicing with the blue team, he always looked for me, man. It didn't matter what, you know, what we was doing. He looked for me, and he told me, you know, keep going, and kept me confident, man. And like I said, man, he always was a guy who came to my room, make sure I was all right. You good, Cope? You know, everything all right? He's a freshman, man. I was a senior at that time. So for me, I thought he was very mature at his age. And, you know, I think he just made some, you know, he made his own decisions and some of the things that people didn't like. But I think that Larry, man, he's been successful with what he's doing right now. And I'm proud of him too, man. And like I said, he's still my guy, man. I still talk to Larry.
As a teammate, were you okay with the way he left?
No. I don't agree on when I was overseas and how I heard and how things went down. I don't think it was a good decision, but on his part, you know, maybe he thought I was doing the right thing. But I think he's learned from it. I'll say that. I think he's learned from it. And, you know, I think his family members, too, you know, who was behind him with that, they kind of let him do it. But at the same time, he made his own choice. And I think that he's living with it. He's living with it. Like I said, I talk to Larry a lot, so he's doing all right.
I will now accept that shout out to Larry Drew. I was skeptical of it at first. We'll leave it in instead of deleting it.
Cope just changed your mind, Adam.
He did.
But like I said, man, Larry's a good guy, man. If you know, teammate wise, like I said, man, at that time where we had Ed, Tyler Zeller, it was four, and Justin Watts and Larry. Larry's one of the guys I was closest to at that time, man. And you know, we always stayed in contact, man. You know, I'm not sure how it was for everybody else, but with me, man, Larry, I feel like he was a good guy, man.
All right, let me ask you an important question, Cope. Should we get armrest on those chairs? You look like you're uncomfortable in that chair. Does it need an armrest?
I was looking for the armrest, man. But you know what, man? This chair leans back.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we want you to be comfortable.
I like it. I like it, man.
Okay. But the problem is you're swole.
I know.
No, I can't explain to people.
He's
Mike,
jacked.
Yeah, Mike Cummins are going to come here and whoop you if you feel bad right now.
Shout out RJ Fitness, man. My guy Reggie, man. He got me back, man.
All right. Cope, you've mentioned names and people. And that was such a great stretch for Carolina basketball. I mean, Carolina's obviously been successful for a long time. But that period of time, I think, can be argued was one of the most successful times in Carolina basketball history. When you look back and think about it, what was it that made you guys so successful, so good for so many years in a row right there?
Well, you know, me and Adam was just talking about it coming into the building today, how the chemistry, man, how good the chemistry is when you're, you know, when you're traveling, you're staying in rooms together with different guys and you're going out to eat. And I mean, even when you're on campus, you're going to class together, you're hanging out, you're eating together. I mean, we, you know, like, people don't know this, but when I got here kind of late, and I didn't come to summer session. I came into the fall, and Danny was one of the first guys. Danny Green was one of the first guys to wrap his arm around me, and then it was Bobby, and then it was Marcus, and then after that, you know, everybody saw that, you know, I could fit in. And I mean, it's just like, it's a family, man. It made me feel like a family all 4 years, still now. I mean, but especially the 4 years I was here, it's just a family-oriented type thing, man. How we, you know, how we carry ourselves and how we stay close to each other, how we go out and have a good time together. And, you know, it's about business when we're on that court. And that's one of the things that I felt like we was really good at. You know, off the court, we had a great time together. On the court, we was like we was going hard each at each other every day because everybody was trying to prove to be the best. And Tyler Hansbrough was one of the guys that I think made us play the hardest because everybody wanted to get the same accolades as him. Everybody wanted to say, "Oh, we working hard as Tyler," and that's what made us so great through those 4 years, man.
What was it like guarding Tyler, as I'm sure you did on a pretty regular basis on the practice court?
Hey, that's one of the things that a lot of the kids and a lot of people ask me, man. Who was the toughest player I ever had to guard? And hands down, Tyler Hansbrough, man. Hands down. Just every day, I remember having a different bruise. my legs hurting, my arms hurting, just battling, sweating hard. And he made me so much, not only a better player, but just a better person. You know, I just wanted to be great at life, at everything I did because of Tyler. You know, he worked hard. People don't understand this, man. He worked hard at everything, the weight room, the classroom, study hall. I mean, this dude would go and eat a sandwich and eat it the hardest way. You smash that sandwich, man. And you're like, I gotta be like that, man. I gotta go smash me a burger like that, man. But yeah, man, shout out Tyler Hansbrough.
No
man.
Bread on that burger.
No
though.
Bread, no bread, no more bread, man. People get mad, man. So, you will not want, if you see me eat a pizza, you'll be so mad.
So, did you ever want to fight him? Like, did it, but just in the course of what was happening on the court, did your emotions ever get?
Yes, I particularly remember one incident. We was at Chicago, actually, and we was playing Valparaiso.
Yep.
And was having hard practice, man. And, man, you know, Tyler was just – he was really getting under my skin that day, man. I mean, he was making all his shots. His hooks was going in. And this one particular move, he did a drop step and got me right in the chest. I mean, got me. And I felt like I took it and failed, but I didn't get the offensive foul. So I said, you know what? I'm going to get him back. Come down very next play. I said, I'm going to get Tyler. Went right at his chest. Man, he played it. Like, he knew what I was doing. Opened the door on me, and I fell down. And Coach Williams got on me so bad. That just made me so mad. I went at him. And Coach was like, that's your teammate. I was like, he's getting the best of me, Coach. Just like always, but today he's really getting me. But yeah, man, Tyler, man, like I said, man, he was a go-getter, man. He went hard, man, every day.
All right, I got two Tyler-related questions. Number one, can you describe to people who don't know what it's like to play pickup against Tyler Hansbrough as compared to against any other normal human pickup basketball player? Oh,
the thing was, is like, we used to be happy when Tyler didn't play pickup. Like, Tyler's not playing that he's going to take off, which he never did, but once in a blue moon he might, and when he did, I mean, everybody's like, ah, yeah. But when Tyler was out there, man, you already knew. You already knew that hopefully he doesn't have a good team. That's one thing. Hopefully he doesn't have a good shooting day. That never happened. And, you know, hopefully they don't pass it to him. That's never going to happen. So, I mean, every day playing against him, man, pick up, man, especially before the season started when we're getting in tip-top shape and we're conditioning every day, was probably the toughest time. He probably won his most games then. In the summertime, it was tougher for him because, you know, you had Sean May going against him. He had Marvin. You know, you had – who am I missing? Byron. All those guys who came back who he needed to go against to make him better. That was always his tougher day. But when it was us, man, he was going at us, man. He was going at us. Well, I think one player probably guarding best was probably Brandon Wright. I think he's probably the only one who could really guard him, but he just wasn't strong enough, and he was real lean. His body was kind of skinny, but Brandon Wright used to be on Tyler a lot, man. That was good matchups.
Okay, and then my other question is, have you ever met any other two 19- or 20-year-olds who are more like an older married couple than Tyler and Bobby?
Shout out Bobby Frazier, man. My guy Bob, man. Hey, those guys, man, you know what? I always used to ask Danny and Marcus, like, what's up with those guys, man? My freshman year, like, those, if you saw Tyler, you saw Bobby. If you saw Bobby, you saw Tyler. And, I mean, they rolled everywhere together. They went out to eat all the time. I mean, it, you know what, man? It was crazy. I wanted a relationship like those guys. They had a good relationship, man. And no, I never seen any relationship like that ever, man. Those guys loved each other, man, and they still do, man. I love Bobby and Tyler, man. They're my guys, man.
Cope, so as I mentioned earlier, Carolina basketball is successful a long time, but there's only a handful of guys who are national champion Tar Heels. What does that mean to you to be in that exclusive club, and do you get treated differently in your mind in some way by being a national champion?
Oh, most definitely, man. I answer the first question. It's hard to explain in words. It's a dream come true, man. Not only was it a dream to play here at Carolina, I grew up watching Carolina every day. My parents made me watch it. Grandma made me watch the 93 championship. I love Vince Carter, obviously Ed Cole, all those guys, man, just watching them every day. It was like that's what I wanted to do. I always said that to myself growing up. I wanted to play here. But then playing here and winning the national championship was just cherry on top, you say it? It was fun, man. It was a crazy experience. It's hard to put in words about how much of, you know, I don't know how to say it. Just how great, it's hard to explain, man. You see, I'm lost in words, man, because Coach gave me the opportunity to come here and play, man, and to win a championship with these guys and play with the guys I'm playing with, man, was just something that I can't put in words, man. It was a dream come true, something just beautiful, man. It was a beautiful experience. And, you know, a lot of people don't know, but 16 and 17 is similar to 2008 and 9. You know, in 2008, and me and Danny was just talking about this too a couple weeks ago, a couple months ago now, because it was like before the bubble, how when we was playing against Kansas and we got our butts kicked, and after how we felt in the locker room after we got killed by Kansas, was like, we got to do it again. We got to come back and play at this same stage and win it next year. And everybody had that same attitude, man. And no matter what was going to happen, it didn't matter, you know, how guys felt about NBA. I think it didn't matter. Like, they felt like they was going to come back and win one, and that was going to better their draft picks. And that's what we did, man. And, walking around here with a ring on is definitely – special. I get treated special all the time coming here, coming to the games, anywhere I go around, eating, people seeing me, recognizing me. Shoot, it's not just here, man. I used to live in New York, and people recognized me and was like, you was on that championship team, man. Wow, can I get an autograph, man? Matter of fact, I got a poster. Come sign it. And I mean, it's crazy, man, to have that and to be walking around. I could be anywhere and just people be like, that's a national champion right there, man. To have that on my resume is awesome, man.
Why do you think that Kansas game happened? What happened in that game? Because, you know, a lot of people got their theories.
I say this. We was not prepared that first half. We wasn't, not due to coach, we wasn't prepared mentally or just physically. When we went out there and I remember Marius Chalmers was making all his shots. Brandon Rush was making all his shots. And then, you know, they're bigs. I remember when I got in the game, I was just telling Q, that Darrell Arthur, man. And Sasha Khan was so strong, man. I mean, that it was just a tough – they matched up with us really good. But when Coach made a rotation and he put I think he took all five out and put all five in, we made a run. And kind of how, like, Miami did, we ran out of gas, man. And, you know, those guys kept making their shots. It didn't matter. You know, when Coach put the first five back in, they kept making their shots. And like I said, I think we needed that, man. You know, we was really feeling ourselves that my junior year, because I think we only lost three games.
Yep.
So, we needed that. That pushed us, man.
So there wasn't some kind of disagreement in the locker room before the game?
I can't. Now, at halftime, that's what you were talking about. Yeah, at halftime it was. It was a real disagreement. Coach was pissed, man. And he was mad and he wanted it more than we did. That was the problem. He wanted it so bad. He was crying at halftime. He wanted it so bad that he was literally, I want this for you. I want this for everybody. And I think we didn't, like I said, we didn't we wasn't prepared until, and we waited too long, and then we ran out of gas. But I don't know if it was a disagreement. I think between us and coach, that was a disagreement. He wanted it, and we didn't. But
so I mean, so you mentioned 16-17. So did you felt like that was like you kind of felt like you knew what they were going through, I guess, in that, or at least something very similar.
I when they got back, I actually was here, and I talked to Justin Jackson. I actually talked to Joel Berry and Theo. They was all in here working out, and I was in here. I don't know what I was doing in here, but I was talking to them, and I asked them, you know, what happened. You know, first of all, with the play, and you know, they said what they said about Isaiah not getting up, or Bryce not getting up on Jenkins or whatever, and they not, it just not, they wasn't prepared at that time. You know, they wasn't realizing the guy who took the ball out could be the shooter, and I think coach even told them that. So they just miscommunication. But the way they was in here working was the same way how we worked when we lost to Kansas. We didn't take no days off. I remember soon we lost, that next day, Tyler, Bobby, and Marcus, and who else was it? I think it was Ty. All of them was in here working out. Danny. I mean, I was like, I got to get in here and work out, too. I don't want to be the only one not working out. And so we all are just working real hard, and that's when I saw from those guys. And they had the same attitude. It was like, you know, we can't let this be. We got to come back and win this thing. And I was kind of surprised at that time because, you know, I knew they was going to lose. They lost Bryce, and they lost some
Marcus.
Yeah. Marcus, they lost some key pieces. So I was like, you know, I don't know if y'all had that same kind of energy, but they did. And they was prepared, and they knew what they want, where they wanted to get to, and they did that, man.
You mentioned some great halftime speeches. Wasn't it the championship season at Cameron when Mike Copeland had a great halftime speech?
Yeah. I'll never forget that, man. People love this story, by the way. Yeah, we're playing at Duke, man, and I just knew those guys wasn't better than us that year. They just wasn't. I mean, they couldn't match up with us. The talent we had, and our first six, from Ed to, you know, Danny, Tyler, Ty, and Wayne, they couldn't match up with us. So at halftime, I'm like, guys, we need to stop playing with these guys. We need to go ahead and finish this game. I said, we haven't lost here. I said, for you freshmen, this could be something special for y'all. And I said, we can't give it up. And I remember Larry said something. And I said, it don't matter, Larry. We got to go out here and get it. And I threw the chair. I said, we got to want it, man. It don't matter about none of that other stuff. I don't care. We got to go out here and get it. And when I threw that chair, I remember everybody looked and was like, Cope, we never seen you so upset. It had never seen, like, I've been upset before, but throwing chairs was not, you know, in my repertoire. So I felt like it would hype us up. And I remember we went out there that first, they didn't even make it to the TV timeout. That first like 2 or 3 minutes we hit them, and Coach K had to call a timeout. And I remember telling the guys, this is how we have to be for the rest of the season. We can't take it off on nobody, especially these guys. What are we doing? And I remember we blew them out, too. I mean, we beat them by, like, 15,
see,
I think.
Now, I can only see half of Cope's face because right. He's wearing the mask. But I can still see how, like, fired up he is.
He's still mad about the first half in Durham in 2009. There's no reason these punks should be on the same floor with us.
Exactly.
11 years ago.
So, Cope, you mentioned 4-0 in Cameron Indoor. That's got to be sweet.
Oh, man. I don't know how people feel about this, but that's up there with the national championship ring with me. I hate them dudes over there, man. So, like, when we went over there and we whooped those dudes, oh, my God, man. That was probably some of the greatest times of my life, man. And just seeing Coach K calling timeout, seeing Greg Paulus get dunked on, Danny. And then I didn't know, but apparently Peyton Manning was there.
Yeah, one of those games, yep.
And I'd never known that until I saw the poster of Danny dunking on Greg Paulus and Peyton Manning looking up. I was just like, this is the greatest time. This is the greatest moment ever right here, man. This is just awesome. All four of those games, man, especially the first. My freshman year might have been the best one. That was the tipping bird, right? That's when we started turning. That's when we knew we can win here every year if we want to. Because they had J.J. Redick. They had Seldon Williams. They had Sean Dockery, DeMarcus Nelson. They had a squad. And, you know, we went in there, man, and we were so prepared. I remember that whole week leading up to that game, we were so ready for those guys because they came here and beat us. And this was J.J. Redick's senior night, and we wanted to mess it up so bad, man. That was that number one thing, just messing up. Because people don't know this story either, man. When he came here, and I don't know if y'all remember, I got in that game. Coach took all five out and put all five in. And we coming in the game, and it's explicit. I can't say what he said, but he called us a bad name and said we suck, and said we was terrible and kill these dudes. Coach Williams is making a mistake. So when he said that, man, I ain't gonna lie, man. I was like, man, we got to get this dude. And they beat us that game. I was like, yo, we got to get these dudes back, man. Like, this dude was talking. He was running his mouth, talking big boy stuff to us, man. We got to get this guy. And I remember he was so frustrated. He had a good game, though, but we frustrated him, man. Marcus was really in him that game.
Of all the Duke guys who people don't like, who deserves it the most?
I say J.J. Redick. I mean – you know what, though? I did not like Greg Paulus, and I did not like Kyle Singler. I remember one time Kyle Singler hit a three in my face and told me, you better get up on me, son. I was like, son? I'm not your son. I mean, man, I probably had to – that was probably the best times of trash talking was with those guys, man. It wasn't – a lot of people didn't trash talk us that much when I was in school. I mean, we just blew everybody out probably. That's why.
Who tried to trash talk but wasn't good at it?
Grievous Vasquez. Oh my God, man. I think sometimes he spoke Spanish. We didn't know what he was saying. And then he'll be shimmying in all the time. He's like, man, get out of here, man. Your trash talking ain't even, it's not even good. It's not even good.
Can't even understand what you're saying.
Yeah. Exactly.
You're putting me down, but I'm not down because I don't know your words.
Exactly, man. He was a good player, though. He was a good player.
All right, Cope. If you don't want to talk about this, it's absolutely all right, and we'll cut it out.
Okay.
Ty Lawson's had some rocky years since leaving Chapel Hill. Do you stay in contact with Ty at all? How do you think he's doing? What do you think's going on?
So, quick story, side story. I went and saw Wayne play in Miami when he was down there a couple years ago, and actually went to his house and got a chance to chill out with him and smoke a cigar and drink some wine, and we chopped it up, and it was real good. And so then I started thinking, I'm like, hey, man, you was the closest to Ty, because I haven't talked to Ty, I don't know, probably since 2009, honestly. And I know he was close with Wayne, more close than Wayne than anybody, so I asked Wayne, and I'm like, you know, what's up? And Wayne said that he wasn't talking to Ty anymore. And that's when I really was like, oh, wow. And so Wayne, you know, told me a story about how, you know, they were supposed to hang out one night. And, you know, after the game, Ty just walked off the court and didn't really, you know, say anything to him. And I don't know, I felt like Ty just kind of started going into a hole. And, you know, he did that when he was here. He'll go into his little comfort zone and just be by himself. And I'm not sure what Ty was going through. I'm not sure what he's going through now, but I hope he's okay, man. Like, you know, I still care about him, you know, no matter what's going on, no matter what's happened in the past. I hope he's taking care of himself and, you know, just trying to get some help for whatever's going on with him, man. But, you know, when I heard that about Wayne, that's when I knew something was wrong.
People always talk about Carolina basketball as a family. So it's easier to be a family with people you see all the time or whatever, people you see at games.
Yeah.
What do you have to do for somebody like Ty who he doesn't make it easy, I think it's fair to say.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think the only result of just checking on him, making sure he's okay, you know, just trying to tap in with him and make sure, you know, he's staying above water. You know, I know he made a bad decision in China. He did. And I hope he's understanding. He came out with an apology, but you know, who knows if he wrote that. But I'm just hoping that he could, you know, just find himself, man. I think he's having trouble trying to find himself. And for us as a family, we just need to be there for him. just you know, tap in with, like I said, you know, try to get in touch with him and talk to him. If he don't want to reach out, that's what, you know, that's all we can do right now. But like I said, I'm praying for him. I hope he's all right, man.
You've mentioned some of these 5-for-5 subs when you were probably coming in and Ty was going out some of these times. Some of those times when we see the 5-for-5 sub and then we see Coach Williams kind of walking up and down the bench and he's talking, but he's not looking at anybody. What exactly is happening then? What's he saying and what's going on?
Oh, man, a lot of times he'd be talking about us running the play right or us taking a dumb shot or us turning the ball over. I mean, and sometimes it'd be about the referees. You know, you hear him talking some noise to the refs. But a lot of time it'd be about us not, you know, executing or not running the right play or doing some dumb stuff on a defensive end, man. And I like the mass up. I mean, when I was coaching, I did the same thing to my guys. I took that from Roy. And I take all five. And, you know, I had a really good five, and I know that we could win the game, but it didn't matter. They needed to learn from it. And that's why I felt Coach was doing to us, you know, but it was tough, though.
We asked Bryce this when he was here a few weeks ago. What's the maddest you ever made Coach Williams?
Oh, man. Okay, y'all love this story. So we're running the 12-minute run. Is that what it is? The 12-minute run? Yeah. Well, you got to make 6.5 laps in 12 minutes. And I'm running, and I pass out, man. I mean, it was like August. It was like 90 degrees. We had just got here. I wasn't in tip-top shape. I had been home eating fried chicken and mashed potatoes and stuff. And I'm running, and I passed out. And Coach was like, "Michael, get up! Get your butt off that track!" And this is the funniest thing. Our teammates ran over there trying to get me up. And I was like, "I can't get up. I can't see." They said, "Open your eyes. Your eyes are closed. That's why you can't see." I said, "No, I can't see." And Coach was so mad. That probably wasn't the most maddest, but I remember him just being pissed about that, man. Now, this story, when we was my freshman year, we was in Cali. We was playing USC, and we went out there for like 3 days. And it was beautiful and everything. We stayed in this big hotel.
That may be the nicest hotel. Yeah. And Carolina basketball stays in nice hotels.
Yes.
That might be the nicest one we've ever stayed.
So you was there?
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Man, that was so nice. And y'all don't know about this, but I was late to breakfast, man. And Dave got me. Shout out Dave Noel. Dave got me, man. I was roommates with Dave, and Dave woke up and left. And he told me he was getting coffee. So, you know, I ain't thinking of it. And he answered the 30-minute wake-up call. But I didn't know it, so I went back to sleep. Preston, set out Preston Puckett, he's calling me. "Where you at? Where are you, Mike?" I'm like, "We got breakfast is not to like what? Next 30 minutes? No, breakfast is in 5 minutes." So I'm running. I get lost in the hotel. You remember how big the hotel
was? Oh, yes.
Couldn't find where we was eating at. Preston finds me. I walk into the room we was eating at. As soon as I walk in, "You're late, Michael," Coach Williams. "You're going to pay for that." I'm like, When we get to the practice where we was practicing at, I ran right away. 22, 33, 44.
Wait, did you do that just on your own?
By myself. In between each drill. So we'll do a hard drill, and then I got to run. Oh, man, he was mad at me because some of the time I didn't even make the times. And, I mean, he was just pissed, man, and said, "Michael," I remember he told me, he said, "Michael, if you don't make this one, I'm going to send you on the first bus back to Winston-Salem, North Carolina." And we was in L.A. Bus? Oh, man, that would have been tough. But, yeah, I made it. My teammates helped me, and that was crazy. He was probably pissed. That's probably the maddest he's been.
Okay, this question has nothing to do with anything. You're on Twitter. You don't tweet very much, but you're on.
Yeah.
Okay. I always see this from you where it's like two people have unfollowed me, four people have followed me, or whatever. What is that? Like a bot? What is that?
I don't know, man. I've been trying to get that off my Twitter for the last like 3 years. I just gave up on it. I don't know. It's like I think it is a bot, like just – It's like showing who follows me, who doesn't, who unfollows me. I don't know. I got to get it off. It's stupid. Stupid. I'm sorry, everybody that follows me. Sorry about that stupid stuff, man.
Okay. I'm going to try to remove some names from this, and maybe we'll end up taking this out.
Okay.
Speaking of Coach getting mad, the Tar Heels played in New York City.
know exactly where this is going.
Unfortunately, guys, had to take this story out. Maybe it will see the light of day on the final Carolina Insider, whenever that may be. But we're just going to have to fast forward on through to the end as we say goodbye to Cope.
We're like, no way! No way, man. That dude's legendary, man. That dude's legendary. That's a crazy story right there, man.
Cope, man. Can you just be a co-host on this podcast moving forward? Can it just be the three of us on here doing this?
I would love to, man. I would love to.
Dude, man, this has been incredible. It's been awesome. Man. Thank you so much for your time, dude. It's great to see you.
Yeah, man. Great seeing you guys, man. I appreciate y'all having me, man. No doubt. Go Hills.
We appreciate Cope's time. And before we talk about it, a reminder that texting while driving takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. And at highway speeds, that's like driving the length of a football field with your eyes closed. Trusted Choice Independent Insurance Agents of North Carolina want you to stay safe behind the wheel. Put down your phone while driving, and let's have a hands-free NC. To learn more, visit TrustedChoice.com and find an agent near you. Of course, Independent Insurance Agents, the sponsor of our interviews. They will also bring you the 5 second challenge coming up in just a minute. So I hope you enjoyed that interview. Look, when somebody just takes quotes from that interview and writes a story about it, just remember that you heard it here. So go back and listen to it again before that happens. Adam, that was, what a fun interview. I mean, it was fun, funny, some insightful stuff from Cope as well, and he really does look good. He looks like he's like on American Ninja Warrior or something. He's looking great. Keto diet. You going to go keto, Adam?
Yes, I am doing it now. And you didn't even hear the whole interview.
Yeah, I had to take. There is one story that now twice we have had. I can't remember who else told it.
Coach Holbrook.
That's who it was. It was Chad Holbrook. We have had two different people, Chad Holbrook and Mike Copeland, tell the same story that I've had to take out that will it will only live on the final pod.
Which probably makes people wish the final pod was coming up soon, which sometimes we do too.
No.
But I don't think.
No, Adam.
It's not on the near horizon.
Well, I would, Adam. Please excuse Adam. He's in a grumpy mood.
It's not on the near horizon as far as we know. But the second Cope walked out the door of Pond World headquarters, we said he could easily do a part two.
Well, yeah. So we have some potty statues here in the Pond World headquarters, as you know. Adam said, Cope, see that? That's a potty statue. He's like, I think you're going to be in the running for one.
I didn't tell him that before the interview I didn't want to put the pressure on him.
Yeah, no. Okay, Adam, would you like to go ahead and do the 5 second challenge, or would you like to do your champion watch first?
Let's do the 5 second challenge. I just want to get it over with.
Okay, let me get my stopwatch real fast.
Okay. This has been built up to the point that now it's like Carolina beating Clemson at the Smith Center. The value in winning is outweighed by the disgrace of not doing well.
All right, I've gotten Lil Cassio's friend. Little AccuSplit.
Where's all your supporting documents?
I don't need them. Okay. Adam? For this week's five-week challenge, you have 5 weeks, Adam, to go across the globe. This week's five-second challenge. We're going to go to basketball in the spirit of Mike Copeland being our guest today.
Okay.
Adam, Mike Copeland was a member of the 2009 National Championship team.
Right.
Adam, you have 5 seconds to name as many members of the 2009 National Championship team as you can, starting right now.
Lawson, Ellington, Green, Hansbrough, Thompson, Ed Davis, Tyler Zeller.
Time. Time. Okay.
I feel like I got some of those right.
I told you, Adam.
Well, I mean, you basically, like, you like hoisted me up to the rim. And yeah, we're like,
it's like we're at a father son camp,
yeah.
And you're tiny little Adam, and I'm gonna reach you up all the way to the 8-foot goal and let you dunk it.
Yeah,
and now you feel good about yourself,
kind of.
Okay, Adam said Ty Lawson. That's correct, Adam.
Yes,
you also said Wayne Ellington. Mm-hmm. Also correct.
I'm Wayne Ellington. See you later, Big Grits.
You said Danny Green. Adam, you're on fire, buddy. You said Deion Thompson and Tyler Hansbrough as well. Both correct.
My name is Deion Thompson. See you later, Big Grits.
Yes.
I wasn't sure. Yes. You said Ed Davis.
Yep.
And then Tyler Zeller, which is correct, but you did not get in time.
Oh, wow.
So you ended up with 6. It's pretty good, buddy. All right. Let's go through who else was on the team. I'm going to give you the jersey number, Adam. Let's see if you can get them.
Okay.
Number 1.
Marcus Guignard.
This is Marcus Guignard signing off, and I can't wait to see you, Big Grits.
Number 2.
Mark Campbell?
Yep. Number 4.
Oh, Bobby Fraser.
I'm Bobby Fraser. See you later, Big Grits.
A recent discussion with Mike Copeland about number 11.
I was going to say something else, but I'm not going to. Number 11?
Yeah. Larry Drew.
Oh, see, I don't even think of him. Even when I just sat here in this very room and talked about him, I still don't think about him.
Number 15, because 14 was Danny. J.B. Tanner. 24.
Justin Watts.
I'm Justin Watts, and see you later, Big Grits.
30.
Oh, I can see him in my head doing a crazy dance.
Is it Kevin Bacon?
Is it Patrick Moody?
Close, Jack Wooten.
Ah.
35.
Travis Stevenson.
Adam, see previous answer.
Patrick Moody.
Number 40.
MC Dot.
44 was Zeller, who, again, you said, but late.
This is Tyler Zeller. We'll see you, Big Grits.
And then Hansbrough, of course, number 50.
Did Ellington start as 2 and then he went to 22?
Yes.
That's weird.
Yeah.
I like him better as 22. That's a better one for him. I'm glad he went that way.
Yeah, he was number 2 his freshman year. Mm. And then 22 the final 2 years that he was with the Tar Heels. Mm. Adam, terrific job, bud. You, sir, are back on track.
I'm going to go ahead and tell you next week's 5-second challenge. Name some Tar Heel head coaches, current or past, any sport. Go.
Name the current head coaches of Tar Heel football and basketball. Go.
The name of this show is.
All right. Time for the Champion Watch. Enough of these shenanigans. Let's get to the Champion Watch. Brought to you by UNC Healthcare. The team at UNC Health is dedicated to caring for champions of all kinds. That includes you and your family. See their lineup at unchealthcare.org/sports. And Adam, who is on your radar this weekend?
Not a ton of action this coming weekend, but there is a big top 5 battle in women's soccer. North Carolina, of course, the number 1 team in the nation, will face Duke. 7 o'clock. I said tomorrow. That's a lie. It's actually tonight.
Mm.
Friday night, 7 o'clock, ACC Network Extra.
Okay. So I'll be ready for that. Tar Heels, good. Blue Devil. Where is it? Is it in Durham or in Chapel Hill?
Yes.
Oh, good. Somewhere in the Durham-Chapel Hill area.
It is in the Triangle. For sure.
We can say that with some confidence.
Yeah.
Okay. Adam, I said we get – oh, well, before we get to your list, Basketball Media Day happened earlier in the week. I don't know if there's anything super newsworthy out of that we don't already know or that we haven't already discussed.
If you've been listening to the pod, you knew everything that was going to be discussed. Here's something you didn't know. That's soccer matches in Chapel Hill
tonight.
There we go.
And maybe the only thing we haven't talked a lot about is Coach Williams saying Anthony Harris was still probably a couple weeks away from being ready to fully practice. He is going through, Adam and I have seen him, out there at practice some, but it is not against any competition. So he may do a shooting drill or run up and down the court or something, but he isn't going to go 5-on-5 or be in any kind of physical competition with someone else right now as he continues to rehab his knee. And Adam, honestly, I do think that's such a big – Anthony Harris is going to play a role for Carolina. The sample size in which we saw him last year was very small, but he was very effective when he played. I think the way that he plays endears himself to Coach Williams because he goes really hard. He's a good defender, high-effort player, so he will get the opportunity when he is healthy and available. And I think the Heels feel – this is my personal opinion. I haven't heard this from Coach Williams. I think the Heels probably feel pretty good about where they are point guard-wise, and I think they feel pretty good about where they are big guy-wise. And I think they like who they have at the wing, but I think that's much a larger question of how might those minutes be distributed between young guys like R.J. Davis. If he's not playing point guard, you know, will he be in the mix there? Will, you know, Puff Johnson, Kerwin Walton, Andrew Playtech, Leaky Black, and Anthony Harris, I think, is in that discussion. So how all of those minutes get distributed, you figure Leaky's a veteran guy. You heard from him on Tuesday on the show. He feels really good about where he is physically and as a player right now. But other than him, I think there's some questions on how a lot of those minutes may be distributed.
I think what Anthony Harris brings you is extremely valuable. I wonder if what he would bring to this year's team might be less important than what he brought to last year's team. Not because any deficiency in Anthony Harris, but because I think this team has more of what he brought to the team last year. So it was so welcome to see him do some of those things and just make good basketball plays and do things that didn't show up in the stat sheet or defensively or intensity, things like that. I feel like this team's going to have some of that. That doesn't mean you just say, oh, don't worry about it, Anthony Tarnos will be fine without you. They need him. But I don't know that you'll see as dramatic a jump when you add him to the mix as you did last year, even when you took him out of the mix. There was an instant drop-off. I think there may not be that this year, which is an overall positive.
He is a very good defender, I think. I mean, I think that's this moment he could play because of his defense.
Because he wants to.
Yeah. And I also think how his knee is recovering is a big part of that. You know, can he get down as low as he needs to? Can he go from side to side like he needs to with as that knee recovers? And so some question marks to be sure. To me, that was probably the biggest thing. If you're a pod listener, I think you probably knew most, as you said, most everything else that was discussed, the quality of the freshman, the increased depth in the front court, Leaky Black's confidence and health. He was one of the players who came out and spoke. Or who was in the press conference. It was Garrison, Andrew Playtech, and Leaky. And so the Anthony Harris news, to me, the only thing as a loyal pod listener that maybe we hadn't discussed a whole lot of here in the last few weeks as we've been ramping up towards basketball season. Okay, should we get to your list, Adam?
Sure.
Let's do it.
What's on the top of Adam's list? Brought to you by Top of the Hill, where Tar Heels come to celebrate.
We mentioned this on the video pod yesterday, but I know there are a lot of Jake Lawler fans that listen to the audio pod. He has moved out to California, which you probably could have guessed when you heard him on the pod. Along with Zach Goins in a great pod appearance.
From inside the film room, this is Jake Lawler and Zach Goins.
See you later, Big Grits.
See you later, Big Grits.
And is having a ton of success, and he's got a short film in the FilmFest 919 that's in the Triangle area. It's called Good Samaritans. I haven't seen the whole thing, but we saw a trailer on the video pod, and because we know Jake Lawler, I can tell you it's probably awesome.
Yeah, well thought out, well done. These are things that just being associated with Jake Lawler come as givens. So certainly excited for that for Jake. I know, I have to imagine he's excited, and that's really cool. First, I don't want to say the first step because he's already done so many things in his past as well, but just another step on his journey to what I'm sure is going to be a successful career.
when Jake Lawler is invited to the Oscar ceremony,
yeah,
I assume he's going to take us.
Yeah. He'll be like flexing his giant arms on the people at the Oscars, be like, no big deal. Some biceps.
He's just going to.
Why don't you try lifting Brad Pitt?
Yeah, he's going to go like sleeveless tuxedo. We got a cool email from Michael Stewart. We'll use this on the video pod next week so you can see it, but I wanted to tell you about it because it's cool. Michael says, I wanted to show you this awesome gift my wife gave me for our anniversary. She took a bunch of my Carolina t-shirts and had a quilt made. Mm. It also has one of my dad's ties and a section from one of my mom's favorite flannel shirts. They passed away several years ago, so that makes it even more special. It's a really cool quilt.
Nice.
So we'll have that picture on the video pod next week so you can see it and possibly steal that idea for future gifts. Jones.
Adam.
You know Carly Kane from the Rams Club.
I do.
Okay. First of all, we should probably mention you need to join the Rams Club.
Mm.
Not you, Jones, but out in Podland really helps all those Tar Heel student athletes that you love cheering for out there on the fields and courts. Carly Kane works with the Rams Club. She was watching yesterday's video pod.
Yeah.
And
thanks. Hey, Carly, thanks.
She saw something that struck her fancy.
Was it the delicious Coca-Cola that I had next to me on at the desk?
No. It was a segment about her father-in-law. Ted Kane is Carly Kane's father-in-law.
Wow.
Ted Kane is a former NC State assistant football coach who is most famous in Tar Heel land for getting body slammed by Donnie Thompson in 1993. So I was talking to Carly about this, and Carly said, in fact, she even got Coach Kane to come to a game last year at Keenan Stadium. And she said, I even got him to wear Carolina blue. Now, I'm going to show you this picture, and you tell me if this doesn't look exactly like what you imagine an NC State assistant coach would look like wearing Carolina blue.
Okay.
One, two, three.
He is begrudgingly playing along for the love of his son and his son's bride.
Yeah.
That's it. He probably went home that night and he said, honey, this is, you know, I must love that boy if I did this.
I had no idea that was her father-in-law.
I didn't either.
I mean, I hadn't given a lot of thought to who Carly Kane's father-in-law was, but when I thought about it, I didn't think.
Hey, we did that one segment on Guess Carly's Family Tree back in July, but
that was during the quarantine. Yeah. Things were different then. Let's see. Mike Miller tweeted at us and basically issued you a challenge.
Yeah.
Because, Jones, as we know, is an expert mile runner.
Yep. So if you might remember from the spring, Carolina track assistant coach Dylan Sorensen set a world record for time running a mile while dribbling a basketball. So then Adam, I mean, if you remember this, this is exactly how it happened. Adam laid down this gauntlet at my feet and said, Jones, you probably can't even run a mile, period.
Mm-hmm.
But especially not while dribbling a basketball. And even if you are coordinated enough to do it, there's no way you're going to do it in under 8 minutes or 9 minutes, whatever it was. I think he may even said 10 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
I don't remember 100%, but I do remember my time was 7:32. I think that's right. I have a picture of it here on my phone. I'm going to take a look back while we talk, and I'll find it.
Well, what Mike has sent us is a story from Good Morning America,
mm-hmm,
about a 28-year-old pregnant woman who ran a mile in less than 6 minutes.
That is going to be hard for me to challenge that for many, many reasons.
McKenna Myler in California ran a mile in 5 minutes and 25 seconds while 9 months pregnant.
7:37. Whatever, pregnant lady. 7:37 was my time, Adam. 7:37.
5:25 while 9 months pregnant.
It's impressive.
Yeah. Good work. I've heard the word on the street is Dylan Sorensen might be getting ready to run that mile again.
Yeah, we heard. I believe someone has since broken Dylan's record.
Whew, these records these
days.
They
fall left and right.
They go quickly. Bradley Cox, our Wilmington Christmas movie correspondent,
yep,
tweeted at us some important news, which was that using the algorithm that Billboard magazine currently uses, Rebecca Black's Friday would be a number one single.
Well, yeah, number one in our hearts. That's the only algorithm I need.
What surprised me was that it was not number one before. I just assumed that it was, but
you assumed wrong.
Yeah. And let's see. Let's see what else. You just wait right there. Did anything occur to you while you were in the radio booth?
What is this setup?
At Florida State that you would like to tell the people?
Well, fortunately, I'm a little cooler headed about this now. So I'm not going to call it a how can you justify that, even though you're trying to get me to do that. So we arrived in Tallahassee very, very early, very early. And we were ready to go. So we were ready for the broadcast, big game. We're in the booth. And, Adam, I have to tell you, once we got into Duke Campbell Stadium, I did not leave until the game was over. It just didn't feel like the thing to do, to walk around Tallahassee at this current climate.
It's really never the thing to do, to walk around Tallahassee.
So we were staying in the booth for a long time. And if you listen to the game, or if you remember our explanation of how our broadcast team is working this year, this is a game when Brian was with us. And so I was in there, and Brian and Lee was there doing pregame, postgame stuff, and he was also covering the team for some writing work that he's doing. Jody Zeugner, our statistician, and Ben Alexander, they were all there. So that's five of us were there. Now, in the booth, we were all masked. I do take off my mask while calling the game, as did Brian, but Lee and Ben and Jody kept their masks on the entire time. So Florida State was nice enough to bring proud sponsor of the Tar Heels, Chick-fil-A, to everybody working in the press box. So, I mean, normally when you go to a game, there is some kind of food for the press. But in our current climate, either there is no food or there is some kind of boxed option like this is. So you can get something to eat, but it's not a buffet per se. So Florida State guy, and I know who it was, but it's not, that's neither here nor there, Adam, comes up and says, how many boxes of Chick-fil-A do you guys need?
28.
Right. I should have just been like, we'll take the lot. So I said, I think maybe even like Brian wasn't there yet, or maybe he had stepped out or something. And so I said, we need four. And I was like, oh, no, we need five. There's going to be five of us. And the guy looks at me and goes, five? The maximum in this booth is four. And he wasn't talking about he wasn't talking about the box lunches, Adam. He was talking about the maximum amount of people allowed in the booth. He said, five. The maximum amount is four. And I said, well, look at us. I was calm. That's exactly what I said, it just like that. I said, well, look at us. We have five. I mean, really? At that point, you're going to tell me that we have navigated a virtual fog of COVID to get into this booth with people that I know and have been around and, side note, had been tested. And you're going to tell me that Lee, you go stand outside that door. We'll all be safer, you included, sir, if you're standing on the other side of that door. There, you're only allowed four in here. Well, Adam, they may have won the game, but we won the night, sir, because all five of us stayed in that booth.
Did you get five boxes of Chick-fil-A?
Yes, we got five boxes of Chick-fil-A. Can I say the one bummer thing about box Chick-fil-A? And I don't dislike the waffle potato chips, but they're nowhere close to the waffle fries.
No, they're not. But you just can't maintain waffle fries in the box environment.
I understand.
But, you know, waffle chips are good.
They're not bad.
Why are they not more prevalent in our society?
You don't see them out there very often.
You don't.
I don't know if Chick-fil-A has a trademark on them or something.
Well, and I wonder if the reason I think they're good is because
I
don't
see
them.
I don't even know if you could do that.
You put a TM right on the chip.
Yeah, that's all you got to do.
Yeah.
Just put a TM right next to it.
It's like when you TM'd Phil Mickelson.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. On the video pod yesterday, we actually, you'll be proud of us. We actually do have production meetings for the video pod. And we were going through.
Hard to realize that when you watch it.
Yeah, these two are flying by the seat of those pleated pants. We were in our pre-show production meeting, and the question was asked what we should label the clip of Mac Brown talking about Phil Mickelson, and I said Phil Mickelson. I was proud of myself, Adam. I still am. I still am many hours later.
That got a hearty chuckle from those jokesters in the control room, which may have later worked to their disadvantage.
Oh, it all turned out fine.
Last thing on the list, other than when Cimarron tried to eliminate one person from the Florida State booth.
Now, listen to this. Somebody, I can't remember who it was, tweeted and wanted, they were begging for me to tell the Cimarron story.
Mm.
Heck, I can't tell the Cimarron. Not now. There's only two possible times that I will tell the Cimarron story. One is the final pod, or two, you might catch me on a good day on our annual Ask Me Anything. So you can, I might do it, but not right now. But just know, Cimarron, # never forget, and not in a respectful way.
Last thing on the list. This is a word problem. It's a brain bender tweet from Ashley, and she wants to know the real question about the giant Skittles, which if you listen to Tuesday's pod, you're well acquainted.
By the way, I took one of the two bags of the giant Skittles to the Angel household, got the thumbs down from the Angel kids. They did not like the texture.
Well, we had a good friend of the pod, Ken Cleary, sample them as well, and his takeaway, and Ken knows his culinary arts, his takeaway was giant Skittles are weird.
Yeah, they are. They are. They're about the size of a milk dud.
Yeah.
I think that's if you can visualize that, that's about the size that the giant Skittles are.
So if you've already planned a trip to Europe solely to pick up giant Skittles, now you don't have to. They're the size of a milk dud.
Yeah.
Ashley wanted to know, the real question is black currant greater than green apple, or is your dislike of black currant greater than your love of lime?
This is a terrific question that Ashley has brought up.
If this was on the SAT, I would leave it blank because the wrong answer could penalize you, but leaving it blank won't hurt you.
It really is the crux of the problem here. Is it worth getting the lime to get rid of the purple and getting the black currant? And Adam, I got to tell you, I think the answer is no. I need my purple. I need the fake purple. It's my favorite flavor. And so the black currant just did not do it for me. And so if I had to choose, I keep the purple flavor, not slash grape. But, I mean, the fact that we even have to have this discussion is the dumb part. Can't I just go back to 2012, back to the beginning of Skittles time when I could have purple and lime? That's what I want.
Do you think there's a country out there that has the ideal Skittle mix?
I don't know that. I bet Canada. Those guys seem to. They probably have it together up there.
The giant Skittles have England and Ireland as their manufacturing sites. But that leaves out a lot of other countries that could have that. You know who I bet is one that might? Switzerland.
Mm.
They seem like they just take the best of everybody. Be like, guys, we don't need to argue. We don't need a second-rate choice. Let's just take all the best of everything, put it right here in the bag.
New Zealand probably does.
Probably.
Iceland.
Yeah.
Maybe. It's a great question, Ashley. I think I got to hang on to my grape.
It's always a good idea.
Yeah. All right, Adam, before we go, football tickets.
Yes. As you know, if you watch the video pod, we have two tickets to tomorrow's game. Got a ton of great entries, great pictures from folks.
I have to say we got a backing up Adam's claim. We got a bunch. This was really hard to choose.
I was skeptical of this method of entry.
Yeah.
But it all worked out.
Because it all worked out in the end.
We got some really good ones. And our winner, Colby Gross. Send us a picture of yourself at the game. And don't take a state fan with you, Colby.
You seem to be second-guessing your selection.
No, I'm just putting some restrictions on this very generous gift.
Okay. Adam, anything else?
No.
All right, we're back next week. As we teased on the video pod, we're going to talk to Larry Miller on Tuesday. Miller, former two-time ACC Player of the Year, was part of the group of players that really helped Coach Smith get Carolina basketball to the level that it has enjoyed 97% of the time since then. And recently wrote a book. We're going to talk to him about the book, about some of his memories, his time at Carolina, and more. So that will be coming up on Tuesday. Plus, we'll have the recap of the state game. And don't forget, don't worry, we got the Rapid Reaction Pod coming up on Saturday. So we'll be rapidly reacting on Saturday after the game, and then we'll be back with a regular episode on Tuesday. But for now, we're going to let Mike Copeland and the RZA get us out of here on the latest edition of the Carolina Insider.
I'm Mike Copeland. See you later, Big Grits.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
Box of sugar and a stick of margarine. A hot pot of grits kept my family from starving. Steamy hot meal served less than 5 minutes. Big silver pot boiling water salt in it. House full of brothers and sisters, the pot's missing. Pilgrim on a box on the stove in the kitchen.
When I was small, we had nothing at all.
See you later, Big Grit.
The preceding has been a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Tar Heel Sports Network.